Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this show has been an exploration of the unknown in a way, what exists outside the mainstream realm of knowledge. And I've been on a search to find the esoteric wisdom, the mysticism, the secret behind the secret, the people who have spent their lives trying to understand the greater reality. That's why I call this program New Realities. So tonight I'm very happy to be interviewing Dr. Nathan Rosenblum. He is what is called a professor of esoteric studies, but that doesn't say what he really is. He is in a sense, a keeper of the secrets, the ancient wisdoms, the perennial philosophy, and the true history of not only Earth, the solar system, the galaxy, but I would say the multiverse of being. So, Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I met Nathan at an expo, and he was on a panel I was hosting, and I found your wisdom encompassing. So let's focus on the ET situation. But before you go into the specifics, tell me like how you got into this realm of esoteric knowledge. What was your basic investigations like?
From the time I was very young, I always had a desire to understand the interconnections between what at first might seem different areas of knowledge. And I understood that knowledge could not be compartmentalized, but rather represented a web of understanding. And as I began to explore the different strands of this web, the more I saw the interconnections and the more I realized the centrality of a spiritual component focusing on esoteric understanding and how this could be seen to connect not only throughout the cultures throughout the world from the most ancient times to the present, but also how disparate or seemingly disparate fields could in this way be joined into sort of an overall understanding. So in my work for many years, I studied, and I still do continuously, I consider myself a perennial student more than anything else. And so I began studying a wide variety of ancient texts from many parts of the world, a wide variety of doctrines and teachings connected with different ideas, with mysticism, with hidden knowledge. And it was with this I came to the sense that all of these disparate ideas could be seen as aspects of a single understanding, that this would transcend apparent differences in religion or philosophy, but that ultimately, through all the paths that one could travel, it all led back to this idea of a spiritual unity transcending all things.
Yes, I agree. You still with me?
Yes.
Okay. So then how did you get to ETs? Because a lot of philosophers never get to the ET question or even think about it, because you know why? They reach that spiritual plateau and they think, well, it's all inside of us anyway. Why look out to some other realm? I think that's probably a misconception, but tell me how you got there.
Yes. Well, it is true that the spiritual unity and this understanding we do find within. In my case, the involvement in the study of extraterrestrials began at an extremely young age. I was really only about 8 or 9 years old when I first started studying this. But I came to understand, even at that time, and then as it progressed, as I moved through my life, from my studies of ancient texts and traditions throughout different parts of the world, as well as folklore, art, artifacts, and other ideas. And if I saw these, which I did, as representing different aspects, while from different parts of the world, aspects of the same concepts and ideas, I came to understand that their descriptions of not only spirit beings, which were certainly important, but also what we may call physical beings, but not of this world, were prevalent and indeed pervasive throughout a wide variety of ancient texts and traditions and folklore from many different parts of the world. So,
but let me just interrupt you for 1 second. Why wouldn't you take the classical approach and say that is part of a primitive mythology that doesn't understand the scientific workings of nature, which is what, you know, traditional mythologists do? Why would you interpret it according to an ET sort of trajectory?
Yes. Well, it has been my experience that the more one thinks one knows, the less in truth one understands. That is to say that with what we perceive as intellect, while we can gain a great deal of knowledge from this, in the ultimate sense, I understood that there was what we may call an intuitive understanding. This is what, for example, the ancients knew as a gnosis, that thoughts can only take us so far. But then once we get beyond that left brain, essentially, paradigm, and move into what is considered an integrated mental environment, to use more modern scientific terms, we then have what we perceive as both knowledge, that is to say, left brain or analytical, as well as the spiritual intuitive understanding. The ideal, and I observe this because at the same time, I also studied a great deal of psychology, as well as ideas of the nature of the mind. And so I then came to understand, and also the idea of a holographic brain. And so then I came to the understanding that what we perceive through simply knowledge can, is a part of it, but ultimately we transcend this. And what that is considered quote unquote primitive actually, in many cases, represents a much more intuitive understanding. And in many cases, as I saw through my studies, it also very strongly corroborated what the most astute scientists, those not blinded by dogma, understood about the nature of existence and the inherent spiritual characteristics underlining this. And I, of course, you know, I saw this in through many ancient texts from all cultures and many different religions throughout the world. You can find this information that does corroborate, and in some cases, with more recent understanding, we are able to blend. I understood that, for example, the ancients, like in Egypt, considered science and religion to be two sides of the same coin, essentially. And this was also understood by many of the great philosophers, such as Plato, and indeed teachers throughout the world, that these ideas really represent different ways of speaking of the same concept. And so in this sense, I saw how these ideas then lead to a sort of a synthesis or a, and towards a greater understanding.
Right. No, I follow you, and I appreciate that, that backs up. So just one other side note, would you say then that the people who think that primitive cultures are really, well, that cultures that are undeveloped industrially are less sophisticated, would you say that's false, and would you say that...
it's extremely false.
And what is missing? I mean, how come they don't know that? What is missing from their analysis? Yeah.
Well, there are several components of this. And I think a legend that is told by many of the Aboriginal groups in Australia is actually reveals a great deal about this. The Aboriginal people in Australia traditionally have lived in very simple ways in a physical sense, while at the same time maintaining a tremendous amount of understanding not only of the natural environment around them, but also of the spirit world, of extraterrestrials, and of...
Yes. I've interviewed the author who wrote the book called Voices of the First Day, which traces the spiritual development of the Aboriginal people.
Right.
Do you know that book?
I believe I've heard of it, yes. But the Aboriginal people...
Okay, sorry. Yes.
Oh, yes. What they say is that they believe that in the dream time, the creator came to the people in different parts of the world and asked them if they wanted to be amongst those people who would be the protectors of the world or those who would be amongst the exploiters of the world, they and their descendants. And according to the Aboriginal people... they, as all of them, agreed that they would be amongst the protectors of the world. And it was understood that as a result of this, they would keep their physical living conditions at a very simple level. But what this means, because they said that in time to come, some of the other people and their descendants would have chosen to be exploiters. But ultimately, groups like the Aboriginals and other people who are chosen to be amongst the preservers, such as the Native people of the Americas, and many other groups in different parts of the world, that it was the Creator's plan that eventually those who had forgotten the original teachings of the Creator of compassion for all living things and the wholeness and unity, spiritual of all living things, that those people who had chosen to be amongst the preservers of the world, they would have the role of reminding those who had forgotten and their descendants. And you will see this, of course. So this then... is what we perceive as primitive. A lot of this has to do with not only ethnocentric thinking, which is of course has been pervasive, but also a group of what we consider civilized. As Mahatma Gandhi said when asked about Western civilization, he said he thought it would be a good idea.
Yeah, I love that line. Yes. Yeah. So exactly. So would you, this is what is been called now indigenous wisdom or the return of indigenous wisdom.
Yes.
And would you say most indigenous cultures were aware of an extraterrestrial interaction?
Oh, yes. This has been, and not only indigenous, you will find this in the religions and teachings of really all nations and cultures throughout the world at various. Now, of course, the groups that they have encountered and the exact nature has varied depending on the people and the location, as well as, you know, shaped by the various cultural beliefs that they have accrued from different sorts of spiritual understanding and various other factors. But yes, you will find this as a cultural universal.
So, okay, then. That's a good place. That's a good kind of... preamble to the main topic, which is the ETs themselves. But was there one race in particular that you feel created the human being as we know him today?
Well,
we know
you must understand today? That in the ultimate sense, what we perceive as human beings are spiritual beings having what we would perceive as a physical existence. In the ultimate sense, the physical is Maya, that is to say, that is the Sanskrit term for illusion. However, and originally, as many clairvoyants such as Edgar Cayce, and as we read in the theosophical texts and traditions throughout the world explain, originally humans were pure spirit and then developed what we may call thought forms or tulpas, to use the Tibetan term, which we would consider to be what we would call physical bodies. Now,
well, you know, I just wanted, you know, Rudolf Steiner said we went through many, many layers of planetary incarnations in order to get to the Earth being. But you know, I find his work very wordy and convoluted. And so just any comments on Steiner like that?
Yes. What Steiner was trying to indicate when he explained about the different planetary levels, that is a concept, as you know, Steiner was at one time an important official in the Theosophical Society in Germany. And when he founded the Anthroposophical movement, that information does come from theosophy. What Steiner had elucidated in somewhat more detail was in terms of what we may call the coalescence of planetary influences. By this, I mean, Steiner saw that the particular type of energy that formed what we would call planetary bodies, and you have to understand when Steiner uses names for various planetary bodies in some of his texts, he doesn't necessarily mean the exact same, on a physical level, planetary bodies as we perceive them today. He means bodies connected to that energy. Some of these ideas, interestingly enough, are not exceedingly different from some of those that Gurdjieff discusses with what he calls the different types of hydrogen and the different elemental of different elements and their density. It actually is a very, very similar concept to some of these Gurdjieff teachings, which are among some of the most complex of Gurdjieff's ideas, but also, again, refer to the same idea and concept.
So going back to where you were going with this, my question really, I know where this world, the material world, is Maya, it's an illusion, but the physical incarnational bodies that needed to be modified from the primal Earth creatures that weren't able to hold the full capacity of spirit of consciousness. How is that? That's what I think.
Well, that is
how
a very
is that modified
idea. The most famous extraterrestrial description of this that the public would generally know is that from Sitchin of the Anunnaki. Now, the Anunnaki, it must be understood, Nibiru was not there. The planet Nibiru, according to channeled material, was at one time originally a satellite of Sirius. So the Anunnaki were originally from a group from Sirius, but because of the highly elliptical, remember Sirius is only, and I say only of course, a little over 8 light years from Earth. This is Sirius A. Mm-hmm. And because of the highly elliptical orbit of Nibiru, it therefore was able to interact with Helios, the solar system. And much channel material has suggested that Helios is in a sense almost a satellite of Sirius A as well. These multiple star systems are quite common. So according as Sitchin explains, the idea of the modification of the human-like creatures that were present on Earth at the time of the Anunnaki. But one idea that Sitchin does not fully discuss is that even before the time of the Anunnaki, there were other civilizations and other groups of extraterrestrials from other areas had also been involved with, including involvement from Pleiadians and other groups. A key point in this, and one of those things that Sitchin does not really discuss, perhaps because he was not fully aware of some of the literature on the subject, has to do with the idea that the idea of humans being descended from apes, which Sitchin presupposes, is not, I would say, entirely correct. Rather, we would say, on the contrary, that while humans do indeed have some ape ancestry, that apes, and this was also held, not only, this is held in Theosophy, and also there were numerous early Christian sects, and even some such as the Seventh-day Adventists today, who do seem to hold similar views to this, that apes were not a natural creation, but rather overall descended from humans. And that the modification of these ape-like creatures represents, and it was said that these ape-like creatures first emerged during the period of Lemuria, but it was said that there were then further modifications of these creatures by other groups of extraterrestrials. One author who does discuss this, whose work, as far as I know, has never been translated into English, was an Austrian man in the early 20th century by the name of Adolf Jörg Lanz, or as he was known through his work, Lanz von Liebenfels. Liebenfels wrote about this in a book entitled Theozoology of the Sodomite Apelings and the Electron of the Gods. Liebenfels, by the way, was also, Liebenfels, however, included a very racist ideology with this also. He was, he published a magazine also called Ostara, and he was also met Hitler, at least on one occasion, and Hitler did consider him one of the people who he had learned some of his occult ideas from. But Liebenfels did also discuss this also.
Well, did you ever read Maximilien de Lafayette's work?
I do not. It doesn't seem to ring a bell.
Oh, I think you would really enjoy it. He understands. He dissects the language of the Anunnaki and how it's influenced our you know, ancient religious traditions, and he also goes into rituals and different levels of understanding. Maximilien de Lafayette, he's written a book called The Encyclopedia of Gods and Goddesses of Mesopotamia, Phoenicia, Ugarit, Canaan, Carthage, and the ancient Middle East.
Oh, that's very interesting. I shall certainly take a look into that.
So go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So when we discuss about some of these other groups, now, I had discussed the idea, for example, and this is a very important idea, of certain groups such as those from Sirius, and the different cultures in different parts of the world were in contact from an extremely early period with various extraterrestrial civilizations. Now, Sirius, as I have explained, Sirius is a blue star, a little over 8 light years from Earth. This is Sirius A. Sirius B, which revolves around Sirius A in a period of a little over 50 years, is a much smaller, albeit a dense white star. Sirius C, and both of Sirius A you can see clearly from Earth with the naked eye. Sirius B is telescopic, and we'll get more into that in a bit later. But there's also been the suggestion, for example, by the Dogon, of a Sirius C as a red dwarf star, which certain, while it has not actually been seen, certain gravitational effects do suggest it. And some channel material also indicates that at one time there was a Sirius D that is no longer in this dimensional space. But
could our sun be part of a Sirius star system in itself?
Well, that is, like I had said, that because it is suggested that Helios, the sun, is also a component of that system, yes.
Okay. I didn't know that you were referring to our sun when you said Helios. Okay.
Yes,
okay,
yes. That is, yes. Yes. So, now, some of the most famous discussion, because you have to understand that there are numerous different groups that have been associated with Sirius, extraterrestrial groups. We see for, like I say, the Anunnaki, which some have suggested, such as Aryeh Boley in Flying Serpents and Dragons. Boley had worked for NASA and some other work. Suggested draconian reptilian characteristics for some of them, and indeed certain ancient depictions do suggest this. But then we also have what would be called much more human-like from the Sirius A system. And some of these examples, as well as fish-like beings, the Nomo, as they are known in the Dogon language. And these have widely described in the Dogon religious cosmology. Now, the Dogon, as is well known, have long been very much aware of Sirius B, which is telescopic. Now, the first author and this was understood by French authors who had spent time initiated into the Dogon mysteries. The Dogon live in Mali now, but they say that they are related to the ancient Egyptians also. And one of the first authors who specifically saw this as being connected with extraterrestrial information, authors in the West who had discussed this, was a man by the name of William Dudley Pelly. Now, Pelly is most famous, or infamous, as the case may be, for founding the... Pelly was an ardent fascist. He was the founder of something called the Silver Legion in the United States, or, as it was commonly known, the Silver Shirts. As a young man, Pelly had a near-death experience. He had fallen into a well and had drowned. And he explained that during the time that he was dead, he went into the spirit world and encountered Christ and was told that he had to return to Earth as he still had a mission on Earth to accomplish. And eventually, Pelly came to believe that his mission on Earth was to drive out the communists and the Jews from the United States. The motto of the Silver Shirts was down with the Reds, communists, and out with the Jews. And Pelly's goal was eventually to become Führer of the United States. Now,
what year are you speaking about? What year?
The Silver Shirts were very active in the 1930s. During World War II, Pelly went to federal prison for threatening Franklin Roosevelt and was released at the end of the war. And after the war, he was always very interested in mysticism and the spirit world, especially considering his near-death experience as a young man. And after the war, he began writing a number of a wide variety of channel books and other books dealing with extraterrestrials. One of these was called Starguests. And in this book, he does discuss the Dogon and suggests extraterrestrial knowledge of Sirius being the source of the information.
Let me just ask you a sort of philosophical question. How could you take someone who's a fascist, how could you take his work seriously if his political viewpoints are so diluted? I'm just curious about your...
It's very difficult. You know, if we consider all of the authors and scholars throughout the centuries, there have been many, many great scholars and scientists and authors who, while they have had a tremendous amount of knowledge, have also, for whatever reason, have also had extremely racist or bigoted viewpoints. Nikola Tesla, who was a brilliant inventor, we all are, you know, alternating current, his ideas of free energy, even the ignition in our cars, so many accomplishments. And yet Tesla was known to tell people from time to time to, as he put in his exact words, never trust a Jew. And Tesla also wrote that he felt that the Jews were undermining science and society in general. So,
well, did he like Einstein? What did he think of Einstein then, Tesla?
He absolutely detested Einstein. He said that he thought Einstein was an incompetent scientist, and he actually said this in the newspaper. And so it's an unfortunate thing, I mean, that there have been many people, if we look at even from a political standpoint, many of the founding fathers were not only racist towards Black people, there were many of the found, and to Indigenous people, of course, but many of the founding fathers of the United States were, a number of them were extremely, had an extreme antipathy towards Jews and to Catholics also. And you can find this with many people throughout the world, you know. It's an unfortunate
thing. I think what you're saying is people can have brilliant minds, analytical minds, and insights into the nature of the physical world, but their social etiquette and sense can be just as distorted as anyone else. That's what I think you're saying.
Absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely. That is very much the case. But Pelley was the first one to discuss this. Now, later on, we see such books as Robert Temple's The Serious Mystery, which brought many of these concepts to a much larger audience than someone like Pelley would have been able to do. Though, interestingly enough, Pelley did have quite a number of prominent authors did work with Pelley and incorporate a number of some of his other ideas. For example, Guy Ballard, the founder of the I Am movement in California, was an active member of the Silver Shirts. And
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a little disappointing, but anyway, what can you do?
And of course, we know about Guy Ballard's other influences, including how the I Am movement led to such developments as Elizabeth Clare Prophet's Church Universal and Triumphant. And another a close friend of Pelley's was a man by the name of George Hunt Williamson, who was also an extraterrestrial contactee, and wrote a number of books dealing with extraterrestrials in ancient times during the late 1940s and early 1950s. Williamson, his actual name, he said, was Mikhail Diobrinovic. And he published some books
But let's get back. I mean, it's great to understand the academic resources, but I'm also interested in what your opinion is about the creation of the human embodiment and how that was manipulated by extraterrestrial influence.
Like I said, there are a number of different extraterrestrial groups that were involved. Sitchin and numerous other authors have talked about involvement in Africa and also in the Middle East. For example, Sir Lawrence Gardner discusses about structures in what is now Lebanon that he believed to have been laboratories for the Anunnaki. And that he believed that had been involved in genetic manipulation of the atom. You have to remember that traditionally in many of the Gnostics and others considered atom to refer not simply to an individual, but to a race or a family of humanity.
Yes.
Now,
Adam Kadmon is what they're referred to in some of the ancient texts, right?
Yes. Other cultures in different parts of the world discuss other different extraterrestrial groups as being involved. For example, in China, traditionally, the creation of humanity is ascribed to reptilian-like beings, specifically a female who is known as Nuwa. And according to Chinese tradition, Nuwa had a human-like appearance, but also had scales and a partially serpent or reptilian-like appearance. And then it is said that because of her loneliness, she sculpted human beings out of clay, very similar to what is described in the Sumerian text with the Anunnaki. Some of them, it is said that she formed by hand, but others that she whipped a cloth dipped in water about and formed them. It is said that those that she formed by hand became the royalty and the nobility, whereas the vast majority, which were created in a more indirect process, whether this means by some sort of more indirect sort of genetic manipulation, became the common people, the vast majority of people of China. Similar ideas are also found in other parts of Africa, again, often focusing on the serpent types of beings. For example, amongst the Zulu, perhaps you are familiar with the works of Vishmazulu Kredo Mutwa, the Sanusi.
Yes, I know Kredo Mutwa. I mean, I know his work for a long time, probably the best authority on Zulu tradition, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. And much of his work, he goes into great detail, but same in other Zulu works from the 19th century and such also do corroborate what he has said about the Chitauri or Draco-like beings being instrumental in forming his ancestors, the ancestors of the Zulu people.
So if we can take all these sources and you've of course you study them all, if you could integrate them, what conclusion do you draw upon when you weigh all the pros and cons and the possibilities?
Yeah. My thought is this. The most important thing to keep in mind is to understand that we are fundamentally spiritual beings. That is the most important thing. In terms of the physical aspect, in the ultimate sense, again, we are all one family of people. We all do emanate from the same source. Different people in different parts of the world, different groups of extraterrestrials, and I have only discussed some because there was other involvement in other parts of the world by Greys, insectoids and many, many other Pleiadians and many other different groups that are discussed in the literature of different peoples in different parts of the world. But what we may see then is that despite the differences and different types of extraterrestrial material involved and the different agendas in which this was done, because again, we do see different agendas and plans of varying natures in this. But in the ultimate sense, the most important thing to keep in mind is that despite all of these varieties and differences, it is the unity of humanity that is the most important component, that beyond what is, of course, important for people throughout the world to remember their ancestry and their traditions. At the same time, it is also important to see the interlinking of traditions and to honor the traditions throughout the world as being different expressions on a spiritual level of the same basic idea, modified by location and time, of course. So while we have many different extraterrestrial groups and their involvement, if we can get beyond the divisions that develop over time to see this unity in this way, we can reach a true understanding, not only in the physical sense, because of course, once you have this understanding, it becomes much harder to see anyone as inferior or to have a disrespectful attitude towards groups of people. But at the same time, to understand that on a spiritual level, because that is the most important, to see humanity as, in the ultimate sense, a spiritual unity, not simply individual souls, because even in the ultimate sense, even that is Maya. In the ultimate sense, spirit is a unity with many aspects of how it presents itself, but in truth, a one whole.
Well, okay, I get that. So in your, but who create, I mean, yes, the body itself was somehow formulated from extraterrestrial. What's the purpose of the human experiment? Let me ask it that way.
Well, this is an interesting thing because there is both a physical and a spiritual aspect to this. In the spiritual aspect, it may be the Gnostics, for example, explained how many of the emanations from the Divine Father, that is the Spirit, developed a curiosity almost, and therefore fell essentially into matter. This is Buddhism, Hinduism, and other religions have similar ideas about this. The different physical reasons for the modifications by extraterrestrials of physical bodies, that has been very varied, including in the case of the Anunnaki, some of them were interested in having workers. There was also the idea of, amongst some of the more groups like the Pleiadians, it was the desire that to form a physical body in such a way that humanity would be able to gain more spiritual insight, to modify in such a way that they would be more able to access spiritual realms. So you can see different agendas in that. But in on the spiritual level, the reason for this existence, the best explanation I can give is that we are here not to essentially remember who we are. By that I mean so many beings, when there's this involvement in matter, there is a confusion amongst these spirits. They forget that they are emanations of the creative source. And this then gives the great illusion to people that they are their bodies, when in truth, this is quite untrue. But rather, that while we are here, and this, by the way, is the case not only for humans, but for any beings in all forms that are in any physical form or incarnation of any of the myriad forms on this world or any other world, is to remember, and this is, by this I mean ensouled or spiritual beings, is to remember who you are, that you are the emanation, the microcosm of the divine macrocosm, that is the creator. And as such,
yes,
when you remember who you are, then you can begin to understand the illusion of what you perceive around you, and through the idea of compassion, then assist other beings in this realization.
Well, I know. I mean, I know what you're saying, and I think, in a sense, that is a given for all spiritually based planets. Is the actual understanding that the incarnational aspect of the material world is illusionary, but the idea of incarnation was not just to know that, but to actually create within the physical plane more of creation, to use the creative impulse to manifest more of reality so the spirit itself could evolve from being in form.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So, well, that is true in the sense that while we are in this spiritual, this physical world, it is desirable that we should work to assist in that manifestation. Because, and this then also comes back to the idea of compassion. Now, compassion is often misunderstood. It does not mean simply doing what other people would desire, because in many cases, what people think they want is not really on a spiritual level what they want, much less need, but rather, in this physical space, when we spiritually manifest or understand this, we then there is then a manifestation on what is perceived as the physical that can have immensely beneficial respects. Because that is another very important thing to keep in mind, because even though we do understand in the ultimate sense that the physical is Maya, that does not allow us to simply remove ourselves entirely from the physical overall, because, first of all, even within this space, we have a responsibility towards the other beings that are present here, human, animal, spirit, because in the ultimate sense, what we perceive as division is illusory anyway. And so it is our job to work not only to help to preserve the world as the Aborigines and other people, that is also then our responsibility to alleviate injustice and suffering to the extent that we are able to. And then there is also this magnification effect as more people and have the understanding of this more and more.
But you're also... Yeah, no, I get that. But I think beyond that, there's also this sense of creativity and inventiveness and ongoing creation. It's not only for compassion. Yeah, talk about that a little bit so I understand.
Well, creation, what we create in this space can, in a sense, in the ultimate sense, like I say, these are the thought forms that we do form, then do manifest as a physical sense. And this is indeed one of the purposes in incarnation, in that if we understand this physical manifestation to be part of the cycle, as the Vedic texts tell us, that part of the work of those who have understanding, who do incarnate, is to help manifest the continuing physical development of these planes in which they find themselves. This, interestingly enough, is also considered, in a sense, a certain type of responsibility, especially amongst those that are considered to have more spiritual understanding, that they specifically do incarnate often for this purpose. For example, we have talked about Nikola Tesla, for example, I mentioned earlier. Part of the reason that he did incarnate at the time that he did was not only to assist with the development of technology in his own time, but with his inventiveness and with his understanding to be able to develop ideas and concepts, many of which, as he himself stated, he also received telepathic inspiration from Pleiadians and such, that would be beneficial to physical humanity here on Earth in the future, long after his lifetime. And this is, again, something that is talked about with many people, that they do then assist in the process of the creation of these things that do develop on Earth. And this generally, often this will carry over between life, from one lifetime to the next. And often this information then, certain individuals who desire to assist in certain ways in these will request they develop or have particular aptitude for this. And this is planned out before they incarnate on Earth, that they would develop these ideas that then they would be able to carry out.
Well, I see. Okay. So what about other ET races?
Oh, yes.
Races that already have a sense, like the Syrians, already have a sense of compassion and understanding. Well, talk about that. Yeah.
The Syrians, like I say, there are a number of different groups. With extraterrestrials, you will find those at different levels of spiritual, just as you will find amongst people on Earth at different levels. The unusual fact on Earth, more than you will find on other planets, is that the great variety on Earth of the levels of spiritual development. In the vast, vast majority of other worlds, all the inhabitants of that particular world, and this is discussed in various channeled information, are on more or less the same spiritual level. On Earth, it is very different because of the wide variety of influences that have been present here, and different extraterrestrial groups. So you have, and different spiritual energies and spiritual groups. So you have this division. We can see, for example, in groups such as there are teachings of the Pleiadians. Many of the Pleiadians and Arcturians are what we would consider among the groups more of service to others. And such. Of course, even within these groups, you will, of course, find those, because there are several polarities, what we may call service to others, or and what we may call service to self. And then there are other groups such as, and these are not judgmental as such. And these
this sounds like, yeah, this sounds like the raw material stuff you're quoting.
Yes, that is very much the case. The raw material is very much discusses this. And as the raw material also discusses, interestingly enough, they say that service to others is, in most cases, much, much easier path, what we would call the right-hand path, than the service to self, the left-hand path. But as the raw material also explains, in both cases, ultimately, one comes to the same spiritual understanding of the unity of all things.
And so the service to self, let's understand that. So you're saying the service to self is as much a path towards totality, because the self is the all, except
yes,
in a narcissistic sense. And we're not talking about narcissism, though.
Right. Well, indeed, as you, since you referred to the raw material, we may talk about this. As it does say that, and they use Orion as an example of an extraterrestrial group that is more service to self. And they explain that those who ascend by this path of service to self, due to a great desire for knowledge and understanding and self and discovery, they often then will integrate with other beings to gain this knowledge. And more as they gain this knowledge, by this they understand that the idea of their being separate was, in the ultimate sense, Maya. And thus we see the return to the source. Whereas those in service to others, they see that in serving others, they themselves also what we would perceive as gain, and thus see that the idea of the separation between themselves and others is also illusory, and thus we return to source.
Right. But I mean, I understand what you're saying, and not to put it down or anything like that, but I think it's, in a sense, a simplistic understanding of extraterrestrials' agenda. I mean, it's great as overall as a general scope. I totally agree. But I'm interested in the specifics of cultural civilizations as they go about, in a sense, their day-to-day activity and the consciousness and the realities of beings such as the Syrians. I mean, could you talk about that? that.
Yes, of course. Well, in terms of the consciousness, for example, of Syrians, there are several different motivating factors that we may see here. Many of the Syrians, that is to say, those of particularly those associated with Sirius A, there is the sense of a connection to wholeness, or a spiritual connection, actually, in a sense of spiritual return, almost, we may say, that traditionally, those cultures that they have worked with and influenced, what they have attempted to emphasize has been A, the interconnection of humanity with other forms of life on Earth. And secondly, the idea of Earth serving as, in a sense, a school, that by spending your time here on Earth and interacting in human relationships, that this is to be seen as a preparatory academy, for lack of a better term, in which humanity can learn to interact with each other and to learn the ideas of compassion. This is one of their main goals that they have emphasized, including, of course, Sirius is often associated with the element of water, and Earth, being surface being predominantly aqueous, is in many respects connected to their involvement here, in that they see this balance between what we would perceive as the land and the water as being a conducive physical environment, thus forming a variety of physical environments in which humanity is able to manifest and learn in. Essentially, we may say, different classrooms.
Well, is there a difference between that, the Syrian A's and, let's say, the Pleiadians, or the Syrian bees, but also be a difference between the Pleiadians and the Orions and the Arcturians? They all have different agendas?
Oh, yes. Each of them has their own specific agendas and ideas that they emphasize, these having to do with their own personal histories, as well as their own spiritual orientation. And when we say histories, this applies both to their history of interaction here on Earth, as well as to their interactions in other parts of the galaxy and beyond, because amongst themselves, they also have their own histories of conflicts, their own histories of ups and downs in how their civilizations have functioned. And from this, they have learned and developed their own ideas and beliefs, which then greatly influence and impact how they work on other planets.
Right. I get that. So go back to Sirius A. If we take an individual Syrian living on Sirius A, on a planet outside of Sirius A, I don't know if they've named those planets, what would a typical Syrian life be like on one of their planets? What is that like? You know, we know individuals here, you know, they want to raise a family or be educated or whatever, but for them, what's their life like?
Well, this is very interesting. The main difference, first of all, their lifespans are much longer than that of a person on Earth. Mm-hmm. There is, for Sirius A, very much the idea of a sort of a community of understanding. There is not the same idea of free will as manifested to the extent that we see it manifested on Earth. And this has to do with the particular idea of them, while being individually ensouled, same as we are, at the same time, having the more of an idea of a group of souls or a unity of souls amongst the population of their world. So, and they have both a male and female for Sirius A. And so much of them would be the idea of a balancing, the idea of spiritual polarities amongst male and female. And also then, for those that do travel then to Earth or to other worlds, assisting other beings on these worlds in some of the things we have talked about, of the idea of education and such. And also there is the other idea that since they do live very long lives, they do acknowledge, of course, the spiritual might be said to be very immediate to them. They, like most extraterrestrials, do not use words in the sense as we commonly understand them. Rather, they have what we would call thought pictures. That is to say, an image appears in the mind and then is transferred as a sort of image rather than individual words.
And what it's like dolphins actually do that, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Through sound. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And this
but was originally... But how do you know all this? How does this sort of information come to you in this form?
Well, that is an interesting thing. A large proportion of the information about the different extraterrestrial groups is through channeled information. Now, of course, channeled information will, in terms of the exact specifics, will vary depending upon the person who is the receiver of this, as well as of the particular group speaking. But when we may see what we would call a preponderance of certain themes being consistent in this sort of channeled information, that is a great sign as to a general accuracy of it. Another source that we do have is for those people who have encountered these beings in a physical state here on Earth. Sirian A do not abduct people, but they do sometimes, in both in ancient times and in the present, have interacted with people. And so from records and descriptions of these, we can then gain a bit more of the source information in that regard. Mm-hmm. And a third source would be what we may call ancient records and descriptions. Sirius is described, as well as by groups like the Dogon and various, many numerous other cultures throughout the world, as I've discussed in some of my...
Egyptians, didn't the Egyptians
yes.
use Sirius as a guide to their soul?
Yes. Sirius, or Sothis, as it was known for the Egyptians, was one of their most sacred stars, and it was associated with not only the formation of the Nile, but also then with the feminine generative principle connected to a sense of nurturing or of a family, and therefore to find return to the unity. And eventually to transition to the field of reeds, which was the Egyptian paradise.
You mean the halls of Amenti?
Yes, exactly. Well, that is different Egyptian texts. Yes, the halls of Amenti and the field of reeds. There are different terms that are used in the various Egyptian texts. Some are supposed that these revert to a slightly different planes of spiritual levels as the Egyptians perceived them, or depending on which spirit being, an individual Egyptian, depending on his or her particular sect or the like associated with. But we can, in many cases, see a sort of very much the same ideas. How much time do we have left? I can't...
Do you have to do something? No, I think we can go a little over. I know... It's over an hour now, but, you know, sometimes there's no one on after. No, I know, and I appreciate you asking. Thanks. Well, we can wrap it up soon, but I like hearing the research you've done because, you know, I want to, what were you saying?
Oh, well, thank you very much.
No, but I want to bring it in a sense back home, because, you know, if we're getting all this help or this, like, harmony, local galactic neighborhood, why are we having such a hard time here on Earth to really get it together? What do you think is going on?
And this is a good point for a good concluding point that you bring up here. The most important thing we have to keep in mind in this sense is that we do have free will. And in this point in our history, we are at a point of a change in ages. And this is the time of the transition from the age of Pisces into the Aquarian age. And throughout the world, different cultures discuss that in this period, there is going to be more emotional and spiritual upheaval, which then can also manifest in the physical sphere. And this, of course, is also contributed to by certain aspects of secret powers and agencies and agents on a spiritual and socio-political level and how they manifest. But what all of these traditions, and like I say, this time throughout cultures throughout the world is spoken of as the time of this transition. But the most important thing to keep in mind is that as beings with free will, we collect both individually in terms of our own lives and more importantly, collectively, have the ability to determine how difficult this shift is to be. And the level of, because the vast majority of what we would consider suffering is created via the social conditions that manifest on the planet. So therefore, if we, and again, this comes back ultimately to the idea of compassion, that if we manifest in our own lives compassion and are able to see this as not only something to be exercised with those who agree with us, but rather that does not mean that we have to agree with others or support others or ideas of manipulation, not at all, quite the opposite in many cases, but rather that we see that all beings in the ultimate sense are spiritually unified, that in the ultimate sense there cannot truly be an evil being, that we are all spiritual beings manifesting in a physical experience, and that in the ultimate sense we are one. In this way, with this consciousness, we then transcend separation. And cultures throughout the world speak of this, and I believe that this will be a very good point of conclusion. It is said, for example, there is a Jewish parable, Hebrew parable, that is said about what we perceive as compassion and the unity. And it said that at one time a great rabbi was encountered an angel, and the angel asked him what he would like to experience. And the rabbi said, I should like to see hell and heaven. And so the angel first took the rabbi to a great pillared hall in which a great table was set laden with food. But all of the individuals around it were emaciated and starving because their elbows were fused so that they could not take the food from the plates and put it into their mouths. And the angel said to him, this is hell. And then the angel took him to another hall, just the same as the first, the same pillared hall with a table again laden with food. And around these tables there were many other people. But these people were well fed and were happy. And the angel explained to him that this was heaven. And when the rabbi looked, he observed that once again here, all those present had their elbows fused. But mm-hmm. they were all very happy and content because it was seen that they fit each other. And so
I didn't know that was an old Hebrew story. I've heard that story before, but I had no idea it came
yes. from that. Yes, it is in the Talmud. But so in this way, we may see, and there is a great lesson here to be learned, that, and I will end with these words. And this was said by the great spiritual initiate, General Albert Pike, the great Freemason, theosophist, and mystic, who said, "What we do for ourselves alone dies with us. That which we do for others lives on forever." Thank you.
Well, Nathan, this has been a very nice education, a great overview of Earth, cosmic, galactic history, in a sense. Thank you. And I know this is a lifetime of study, and we've only really just begun. Can you give us a little background, like where do you teach and how people can find you?
Yes. My website is www.theserpentrises.com. That's one word, The Serpent Rises. On my website, people can find information about upcoming lectures and programs. There's also information about DVD and CD recordings. And there's also other contact information where people can communicate with me should they have any other questions or other things that they would be interested in discussing. And I am always happy to do that. And I hope if you're interested, I may appear in a future program of yours.
Yeah, no, we'll do more. But what anything coming up immediately that you can think about
In the next year, I'll have numerous more programs listed on my website, including the possibility of my a book of some of my transcripts of some of my lectures that may be coming out sometime next year. So there'll be much more information about all of this, as well as on future recordings and such on my website as these things happen.
Great. Well, thanks for being a guest on New Realities. We'll definitely do more shows.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. I'll give you a call sometime this week, too, okay?
Of course. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nathan, Dr. Nathan Rosenblum. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this is New Realities, and we'll go more into this extraterrestrial question, the uncovering of the government-held secrets, what the story on disclosure is as this new administration may or may not be part of the revelation of these times to come. So, I guess they are because it's all happening. So thanks for listening. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. If you can also go to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/newrealities. And you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.